All right, back on the Young Turks. Castro's here with us. Amazing stories. Very much looking forward to it. Kaepernick is a hell of a controversy. We'll discuss that in a second.
Kaepernick.
Yes, that's right. Scott Baker writes in, I love that Cenk Uygur mouths the lines of the soundboard unknowingly. Well, Scott, you just gave it away.
Yeah,
I totally literally did not know that. So let's see if this works.
It's not human intelligence.
No, wait, I said that. Said it out loud. Okay. Sean Ferris says that is literally referring to the Trump Tower show. The most 70s intro into a TV show in television history, bar none. Well, that's true because it was the intro to Dallas, which was the biggest TV show in the 1970s. Joe Oliver writes it, I'm calling it, Trump wrote this crap. I bet you he did. I mean, it is so bad that it sounds like Trump wrote it. And Ben Cosette says, that can't be real. That has to be a parody. There's no way in the hell the tower is a real thing. Ben, I'm right there with you. Like, if I find out it's a parody, I'm not going to be at all surprised. Because that was just one of the worst things I have ever seen. Okay, now, membership, how's it going? We're going to update everybody on Monday.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You know, when we first started, we were in the 22K ballpark. We asked, could we see 23,000? We did! We saw 23,000! Then we asked, hey, can we see 25,000? Then we'll get aggressive, progressive, and some of the other shows up. Did we see 25,000?
No!
Right now we're at 23,489. We're getting there. We're getting there. We gave you aggressive progressive anyway because we're running out of time before the election. You guys really wanted it. God bless. We did it. Everybody sign up so you could watch that. We had the first edition. Actually, they had the first episode, Jordan and Jimmy, earlier. Mm-hmm. We kind of turned it into the aggressive progressive. And then me, Steve, and Jimmy did the first live one last Thursday. If you remember, definitely check it out. If you're not, tytnetwork.com/join to become a member, change the media along with us. And I think that if you're a progressive, you'll love that show. Speaking of which, one last thing for you guys. Tonight, if you're a member, you're going to get to watch Wes Clark Jr. Interview a real progressive Democrat. His name is Joe Salazar. Mm-hmm. He's running for office in the 31st House District in Colorado. He's one of the rare guys that Bernie Sanders has endorsed. And so Wes Clark would be interviewing him tonight live at 6:15 Pacific, 9:15 Eastern. If you're not a member, go tytnetwork.com/join. Once you are a member, then you can watch that live at tytnetwork.com/tytinterviews. Mm-hmm. Okay? All right, Casper, what's up?
All right, let's do some stories. Beyoncé continues to use her platform and various huge appearances in order to raise awareness about the black community and specifically Black Lives Matter, police brutality against the black community. Well, she did the same during the VMAs, and her performance, of course, was awesome. You see some pictures of it right now. And you know, there was a really strong message. Apparently, there were some backup dancers that were dressed as angels. And there was a lot of symbolism because the angels were then shot and killed, or looked like they were shot and killed. Let me be clear about that. And
she so that was they actually killed them. They're like, oh, we got to make it realistic.
Yeah, we got to really drive this point home. And so the whole point of that was to, you know, kind of show the severe situation that minorities are dealing with in the country right now. Well, of course, fast forward to a day later, and you have various pundits talking about how Beyoncé is terrible for doing this. And one of those people is Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani goes on Fox News, Fox and Friends to be specific, and he tries to make a point about how he's actually done more for the black community than Beyoncé ever has. Take a look.
I want to talk to you about the war on cops. I want to get your opinion on this. Last night at the VMA Awards, Beyoncé, she walks the red carpet with the mothers of black men that were killed by police. In this performance that you see here, her dancers were circling around her, and one by one, they fell to the ground, and there were red lights underneath them. And that was supposed to symbolize black cops killing, killing black individuals.
Yeah, you know, you're asking the wrong person, because I had five uncles who were police officers, two cousins who were, and one who died in the line of duty. I ran the largest and best police department in the world, the New York City Police Department. And I saved more black lives than any of those people you saw on stage by reducing crime, and particularly homicide, by 75%.
So does that offend you, seeing
those images? Of which maybe 4,000 or 5,000 were African-American young people who are alive today because of the policies I put in effect that weren't in effect for 35 years.
So that's what Rudy Giuliani does, right? And look, to be fair to him, when he was mayor, crime did drop, but it was actually a continuing trend. So if you look at the years prior to him getting elected as mayor, crime was already decreasing. And so he can take some credit, but he likes to take all the credit. And so we're going to get into numbers just to prove what I'm saying in just a second. But
yeah, look, there's a couple things here. First of all, they have all these crocodile tears whenever African Americans say, hey, can you stop shooting us? Mm-hmm. And they say, oh my God, how could you do this to the cops? It's a war on cops. That's the crocodile tears. Now, they're obsessed with wars. Mm-hmm. It's a war on drugs. It's a war on Christmas. You can tell how absurd their wars are and all this stuff. No, nobody's saying, let's go get the cops. What everybody is saying is, let's reform the system so the good people who go in don't get corrupted by the system or the training so that they shoot too quickly or they shoot minorities too quickly because of the prejudices that's in all of society. Nobody's saying that their cops are particularly evil and they're out to destroy black people and so let's now have a war on them. And there's outside of a couple of lunatics, there's no one who believes there should be a war on cops except the people on Fox News channel who want to label it that way to start wars.
Right, that's actually a really great way of putting it. And when you think about any other profession, every profession faces some sort of criticism because of some wrongdoing by some members of that profession. So, for instance, we have a huge opioid epidemic, right? We have people who are addicted to painkillers or addicted to heroin when they can't get their hands on painkillers. And part of the problem is that painkillers are overprescribed. Does that mean that there's a war on doctors if you bring that up, right? No one says that. Same could be said of journalists. There are journalists out there, people posing as journalists, that do really terrible work, right? And so do I, as a member of the media, okay, do I sit back and think, oh my God, there's a war on members of the media? No, some people aren't doing their jobs responsibly, or there's an issue in the training. Whatever it is, there needs to be a solution. That doesn't mean that people are sitting back and saying, oh my God, all these cops are terrible, war on cops. No one is saying that other than Fox News, so that's a good point.
Okay, and Giuliani's obsessed with Beyonce.
Yeah.
Whenever Beyonce does any performance, he's out there like, I've been watching Beyonce over and over and over again, just to be sure, and I'm telling you, after I reached conclusions, the conclusion I came to was that she is against cops, and that's why I can't stand her. That's why I'm going to go back later and watch her again and again until I'm done again. Okay? And so, yeah, I got it. She's an entertainer who's powerful because she has wide reach and wide audience, and that drives you crazy, among other reasons why you're obsessed with her. Okay? Because they're thinking, no, you don't get to control the message. We control the message. So since they do propaganda, they assume everyone else does propaganda. Whereas Beyonce is doing what she is paid to do, which is write songs, perform them, and yes, songs have a message. There's nothing wrong with that. What, you just want them to be like roses are red and violets are blue? Those songs have had a message forever. And when it's songs you like country music and about kicking your dog or whatever, you love those songs and their message, right? Oh, yeah, sweet home Alabama, right? But when it's a song you don't like, oh, I can't believe they put a message in a song. Yes, they did, and it's a very simple message. Stop killing unarmed African Americans. Not that controversial.
Sweet Home Alabama is a great song.
It is. I actually have it on my list. But every time I listen to the lyrics and he's like, you know, they supporting Governor Wallace and segregation, I'm like,
I ignore that.
I know. And then I go back to Sweet Home Alabama. And afterwards, of course, I do.
So let's get back to what Rudy Giuliani did and did not accomplish when he was mayor. Okay, so first of all, credit where credit's due. He did, put more resources into local law enforcement, and that did help in decreasing crime. But as I mentioned, crime had already been decreasing for a few years prior to him even getting elected. Now, what did he do? According to PolitiFact, he was responsible for reorganizing the New York Police Department and providing the resources it needed. He gave precinct captains decision-making authority and backed CompStat, an innovative program that tracked crime and held commanders responsible for their sectors. So CompStat was just a better way at transparency, figuring out where the crime was happening, when it was happening, and what needed to be done to kind of deal with it, right? However, look at this. The violent crime rate dropped 56% during the 8 years he served as mayor, Murder was down nearly two-thirds. Robbery was down 67%. Aggravated assault down 28%. So when he makes these statements, it's true. But then let's take a look at the massive caveats. So violent crime in New York began falling 3 years before Giuliani took office in 1994. Property crime began falling 4 years before. The decline accelerated during his administration, but the turnaround he claims credit for started before him. The city with the best record for reducing violent crime during that period was actually San Francisco, not New York.
So now let me give further context. During the time that Giuliani was mayor of New York, there was a precipitous drop in crime and murder rates all across the country. So now, every once in a while, both liberal and conservative mayors would take credit because it's their politicians. They're like, look at all the crime going down in San Francisco. It's me, it's me, it's me. But wait a minute, it's in San Francisco, it's in San Antonio, it's in Nebraska, it's in New York. It's all across the country. Obviously, there were larger trends.
Yeah.
And in Giuliani's case, he ran against David Dinkins. So David Dinkins is soft. He's soft on crime. What he did was terrible, and it led to the wrong results. Wait, if Dinkins was so soft and wrong, why did crime start going down on his watch, not your watch? Now, I'm not trying to take away all credit from Giuliani, and I think some of the things that he did in terms of tracking crime was perfectly logical.
Right.
Some other things he did, especially towards the latter end of his tenure, I think was way over zealous and
stop and frisk was one of them,
and was counterproductive. Mm-hmm. Okay, but when Giuliani goes out there and is like, "Oh, I'm the guy who stopped all the crime," no, it's political BS. Crime was going down all across the board, and it started with Dinkins, who he claimed didn't know what he was talking about. So if it was all your ideas and your policies, why did it start way before you with the guy you thought was totally wrong?
Yeah, and also, another thing to take into consideration is one of the main reasons why there was a drop in crime throughout the country, not just in New York, was because of an improving economy, right? So that has a huge role in decreasing crime. Because why do people commit crime? It's not because they're just inherently evil people who want to go around committing crime, right? Theft and things like that, I'm not making excuses for it, but it usually has to do with someone who's desperate, someone who's in a low socioeconomic status and doesn't know what to do.
So there's a ton of factors, but here's the one thing that's clear. It wasn't a conservative or a liberal thing, because they say, well, it's, you know, Rudy Giuliani was so conservative, that's why New York did so well with crime. And then they tell you San Francisco is the worst, most liberal city. Well, the most liberal city had the biggest drop in crime. So what now? So the reality is, all that is propaganda, and it's perfectly okay to question how we do things. That is how you get to better results. That's what you're supposed to do as an American. So the reality is Beyonce is doing the exact right thing, and that's what's driving them crazy.
Mm-hmm. All right. 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick decided not to stand for the national anthem, and some football fans are not standing for that kind of behavior. Now, the reason why he did this was politically motivated. He was trying to make a point about Black Lives Matter, about some of the police brutality against the black community. And he released a statement about it. He says, I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. To me, this is bigger than football, and it would be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder. Now, of course, some people were in favor of this type of political speech. Others, not so in favor. Let's give you a quick example of some of the actions people are taking against Kaepernick.
Okay, obviously later his house burnt down.
No, as I was watching that, I'm like, oh my God, please be careful. Like, I mean, if this is what you feel like you need to do, fine, just be careful.
Just in case you thought I wasn't kidding, yes, his house did not burn down as far as we know. But you know, 12% of the guys are like, oh yeah, right, I gotta put it out. Oh, I don't know what to do next. So he's got a lot of criticism. Anna's gonna tell you more about it in a sec. First off, was the right thing? Yes. Now, would I have done it? No. So what do I mean by that? Mm-hmm. So I love the American flag. I've talked about it a lot before. That flag isn't theirs. It's all of ours. And so I believe in the ideas and the principles of America. So I stand for the anthem, and I think that's the right thing to do. I think that you fight within the system, and America has set up a good system for us to be able to succeed in that way. So it's not what I would have done. But the reason I like it is because it's an athlete who has some sort of spotlight, as you can tell because of the extreme reaction, right? And he could put that spotlight on an issue that matters so we get to the right fix. Mm-hmm. So now I happen to disagree with the manner in which he did it, but I think that's a lot less important than the fact that he's willing to risk things. And this is not a guy who's that well established. Believe me, I had him on my fantasy team. He pulverized my team single-handedly. So I got no love for Colin Kaepernick. So, but he's at least taking a stance. Now, for example, I asked LeBron James to take more of a stance when they shot Tamir Rice. Mm-hmm. And then they charged his family $500 to transport his body back to the hospital. Now, luckily, that was so egregious that they walked that back the next day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, LeBron James once wore a T-shirt, and then later at the Olympics, they did the other stars did something, and yada, yada. He could have sat out a game, and it would have made gigantic news. And yep. When it makes news, it at least starts a conversation about, look, people are angry. What are they angry about? What are they so angry about? Oh, maybe we get some other Americans to think, hey, you know what? Perhaps if it was my kid who was being shot when he's 12 years old with a toy gun, I'd be super mad and I'd want to fix the system.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, that is not how most people who are critics of Kaepernick have responded in this case.
Right. I'll give you another example. One man by the name of Matt Helling writes, Get the hell out of our country if you don't want to stand for our national anthem, Colin Kaepernick. The nation has made you millions. Hashtag piece of shit. So, look, first of all, content of his political activism aside, I always find it really interesting when people, like, lose it over someone who doesn't stand for the national anthem, right? Mm-hmm. Like, does that make you question your love for this country? Does that, like, why... Okay, so he doesn't want to stand for the national anthem. Like, why are heads exploding over this? Okay? Even if it was for something that you don't agree with, even if it's for something that's stupid. Like, for instance, let's say he didn't want to stand for the national anthem because we actually did something about police brutality, and I was against that, right? I wouldn't be offended that he's not standing for the national anthem. That's a form of political speech. I get offended when people... you know, attack one another viciously, when they try to tear one another down viciously, when it doesn't actually lead to a dialogue, right? And ironically enough, the same people who run around whining and crying about safe spaces on college campuses apparently need a safe space from Colin Kaepernick not standing up for the national anthem.
Okay, so look, and I can relate to this because, remember, I used to be a Republican, and this is one of the issues I was conservative on. And mm-hmm. I remember I being... really mad that Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf did not used to stand up for the national anthem. He was a basketball player who was pretty good back then, and got in a huge debate with my liberal friends. And I thought, look, you're spitting in the eye of this country that has provided for you and for all of us. That's not the productive way to do it. And I still believe that it's not the best way to do it. But I've matured over the years and realized, okay, I don't agree with it. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have a right to do it. Mm-hmm. It isn't clearly a form of expression. I mean, how insane is it that Supreme Court says that corporations bribing politicians is a form of expression, but yet there are people who think not standing for the national anthem is not a form of expression? Of course it's a form of expression. So I realize now that's like his opinion, man. Mm-hmm. And we get to have those in this country. That's the whole point of the country. So if you're a patriotic American, then you should realize, and I should have realized back then, that this is not such a bad thing to do. It's an American yeah. thing to do, to disagree in different ways and show that in different ways.
I just feel like someone's patriotism or lack of patriotism says nothing about me or my love for the country. And so if someone feels like they've been wronged by the country, which, by the way, many Americans do, I'm not going to be up in arms because they didn't respect the national anthem. Like, I get it, right? People get all up in arms about patriotism. But you know what would be much more patriotic? Doing things that would actually help fellow Americans instead of brushing a gigantic problem under the rug and pretending like it doesn't exist, right? If you are really patriotic, you look out for your fellow Americans. But that's not what we're seeing in the country right now. We lack empathy. We're all very individualistic. You know, this country was founded on, you know, being a community and working together. We don't do that anymore. Now it's all us versus them. I'm out for myself. Everyone else can go F themselves.
And so I like the irony at this point, too. People, like, the other thing they get upset at is, like, burning the American flag.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you're not supposed to burn the American flag. You're supposed to burn Kaepernick's jersey. Oh, I see. I know a lot of people are saying to Kaepernick,
supposed to do, you take them out of the office and hit them with a stick a couple times. They will do.
That's not what they say.
That's some of them are saying that, but that's not what I meant. They're saying to him,
get up! Get the fuck up! Get the fuck off this train!
Okay, but just calm down. When he sits, the earth does not move. Everything's going to be okay. That's his opinion.
Yeah.
And try to think about the core of the issue, the actual issue. Open your eyes a little bit.
Yeah, they don't want to focus on the core of the issue. Look, I don't think that the people who are burning his jersey and the people who are upset at him are upset because he didn't respect the national anthem. They're upset because he's raising awareness about a topic that they don't want to have a discussion about. That's what it's really about.
I know. They're like, athletes should know their role. Their singers should know their role. They're never involved in politics. Except for all the athletes and all the singers who've always been involved in politics.
Yep.
And now are celebrated as American heroes like Muhammad Ali and the guys from the 1968 Olympics and all the singers that you like and almost every other example.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's move forward.
All right. Katrina Pearson continues to make a fool out of herself on mainstream media when she supports, endorses, and defends Donald Trump. Well, now she's made an even bigger fool out of herself on Twitter, where she responded to Chrissy Teigen's insanely sarcastic tweets without realizing how sarcastic they really were. So over the weekend, a series of tweets were put out by Chrissy Teigen, and I want to read them to you and then read Katrina Pearson's response. She says, I relate to Katrina Pearson in the way that I would also be an incredibly horrible choice of campaign spokesperson. I get it, Katrina Pearson. Get that money. Sell that soul. I personally could not go to bed sobbing into my pillow, but you're just so strong. Can you imagine giving up as hard as Katrina Pearson?
That's really funny.
I know. Not many of us could wake up and do what Katrina Pearson does every day with a straight face. What an inspiration. And then her final tweet was a scene from The Office where Daryl says it best. You know, Daryl is saying all these nice things to the boss. You explain it better.
Yeah, okay. So I love that scene because Michael Scott's on top of the roof thinking of committing suicide, and Daryl's trying to walk him off the ledge. And he says, no, look, Michael, I couldn't be you. It's way too hard being you. And Michael's like, really? And he's like, oh, you're brave, man. Nobody wants to be you, but you do it every day. Right? And it's hilariously sarcastic, but Michael doesn't get it. And he's like, Daryl says to him, you are so brave. You're like Braveheart. And he's like, oh, I like Braveheart. So now, get a load of Pearson's response to Teigen's tweet.
She says, thank you, Christine. My fave movie is Braveheart. Happy face. Sometimes you have to do what's right, not what's popular, with a little heart emoji. Like,
oh, that's so sad. Oh, that's so sad she didn't get it. No, what's saddest about that is that she made a reference to Braveheart. Because let's assume, give her every benefit of the doubt, and say she didn't see any of the earlier tweets that are so super obviously over the top sarcastic. She only saw the last two that she seems to be responding to, right?
Yeah.
Well, they're both clearly sarcastic anyway. But then if you reference Braveheart, that means you watch the clip. The clip is obviously making fun of Michael Scott. But she is Michael Scott. So just like the character, she doesn't get it. She's like, oh, am I brave? Am I like Braveheart? Well, that's like my favorite movie. Oh,
but
that's
sad. I feel like she's trained her mind to basically reject any information that conflicts with her own. That maybe she just doesn't see it, right? Like she doesn't see the sarcasm because the sarcasm doesn't register with someone who thinks that she's always right no matter what. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And so when Teigen says to her, we couldn't wake up and do what you do with a straight face. She's like, yeah, but I can. That's why I can do. Well, I'm one of the few people in the country who can tell. So you know, back Donald Trump when he says crazy stuff. I'm awesome. I'm like Braveheart.
So do you think that she's actually making a ton of money off of being a Trump supporter and going on all the outlets? Like, I just, I don't know. I can't imagine that she's like rolling in dough doing what she's doing.
One, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Two, these guys always translate fame into some sort of dollar signs, partly from conservative outlets will then let them write books and then pay for all the books.
Oh, that's right.
So this is an old trick that they do. And then so then they'll say, oh, they're New York Times bestseller, Katrina Pearson. You're like, how the fuck did she sell any books?
Yeah.
It's because the same publisher bought all the books because it's funded by a conservative guy who wants to put out her kind of propaganda, right, and wants to have that face and that, you know, identity as an attack dog against women and people of color, etc. So they do this, and then they go get speaking engagements. Same thing. So it's a cottage industry. So her and Scotty Nell Hughes and all those whack jobs, they've got money flowing in at least for another couple of years. And besides which, even if it wasn't for the money, are you kidding me? They're obsessed with the fame.
I don't, that's what I don't get. Like, I don't understand the obsession with fame, because I get it. I mean, some people think any fame is good fame, but this is not good fame, right?
Like, no. For people that are obsessed with the spotlight, I remember seeing Scotty Nell Hughes walk around the RNC like she owned the place.
I remember that.
Yeah, and she was like, cameras, where are you? Where are you, cameras? You know I'm going on, Scoon. I never did anything before in my life that anybody paid attention to. I'm now Scotty Nell Hughes. So that's how they are. Katrina Pearson's having the time of her life. And she's too slow to even figure out when people are making fun of her. So for her, everything's rosy in the world.
I guess so. All right, let's take our first break. When we come back, an awesome viral video featuring Helen Mirren and one of the most sexist interviews I've ever seen.
Go! Okay, back on Young Turks. Henry the Engineer writes in, okay, so they don't get science, and now we find out they don't get art, referring to how Rudy Giuliani is pissed at artists like Beyonce. What in the world are they teaching in right-wing schools? Well, Henry, that's super obvious. Yeah, they're teaching religion and conservative propaganda. That's what they'd like to teach. Moises Montalvo writes in, I fought for his right to do that, and our country is more than just music and cloth. There's too much attachment to symbols. Super interesting. So I assume Moises was in the military, and yeah, that's exactly right. You didn't fight for a piece of cloth. You fought for the idea, which is what Kaepernick is exercising. So wonderful. Brandon Atkins writes in, all these guys hating Cap for saying that the country has problems. Love Trump for saying the country has problems.
It has to be the right person pointing to the problems that are convenient for the group, right?
Yeah, if Kaepernick said as an explanation for why he didn't stand for the national anthem, I want to make America great again, people would be like, yeah, that's right, okay?
Totally. Or if he didn't stand because he felt like there was too much criticism of the cops. You think those people would be burning his jersey?
Yeah.
I mean, there might be other people burning his jersey. Let's keep it real, right?
Everybody's got to burn something.
Yeah.
Anyway, Brandon added hashtag subtle racism. Brandon, I like that. You know, I want to give Brandon a t-shirt. I'm going to make Jen's life a little harder because I thought that was such a great point. So let's raise the roofer in here and get Brandon a t-shirt. ShopTYT.com for all the wonderful TYT t-shirts. Okay, Rich Crab says, but it's not patriotism. It's nationalism that does the screaming and gets offended. Also a good point, Rich. And our members of the day are Randall Jeter, member number 1516, and obviously the brother of Derek. Not at all obvious nor true. And then member number 1517 is Nathan Watkins, or at least not true as far as I know. All right, Nathan and Randall, you guys are awesome. We've got a great post game for you guys today. All the members get all the post games, tytnetwork.com. /join, go.
All right. A video featuring Helen Mirren getting interviewed in 1975 is going viral. And the reason why it's going viral is because it shows that even though there's still some sexism that exists today, we've come a long way in terms of the way people interview women on their shows. Now, this interview was done by Michael Parkinson, and apparently he thought it would be totally okay to talk about her body, referring to her body parts as equipment. And he actually opened the interview by referring to Helen Mirren as sex queen, amorous boa constrictor, especially telling and projecting sluttish eroticism.
That's insane.
Yeah, like, that's what he said about her.
Like, it's 1975. And I get like sex queen, and it depends on the context, etc. It's not by definition necessarily sexist, you know. But an amorous boa constrictor and projecting sluttish eroticism.
I can't even imagine. Okay, so that's she how was, she got introduced to the interview.
By the way, she was promoting her upcoming production of Macbeth with the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Sluttish eroticism. Okay, so that's not even the worst part. Okay, here's a snippet from the interview, and try not to cringe as you watch it. Take a look.
But do you find, in fact, that this, what could be best described as your equipment, in fact, hinders you, perhaps, in that pursuit?
I'd like you to explain what you mean by my equipment.
Well, people watching...
Great detail.
Well, your physical attributes.
You mean my fingers?
No, I meant your...
Come on, spit it out.
I meant your figure.
My figure? Mm. Sorry, what was the beginning of the question? I've forgotten.
The question was, do you find that your figure, your physical attributes, which people are always going about, hinder you in your pursuit of the ambition of being a successful actress?
A serious actress, because serious actresses can't have big bosoms. Is that what you mean?
Well, I think that they might sort of detract from the performance, if you know what I mean.
Really? I can't think that can necessarily be true. I mean, what a crummy performance if people are obsessed with the size of your bosom or anything else. I would hope that the performance and the play and the living relationship between all the people on stage and all the people in the audience overcome such boring questions, really.
At that point, he changed the subject immediately, right? And he started talking about other things. But look, it wasn't just what he was asking her and how he was asking her. It's the fact that he literally looked down and stared at her boobs as he's doing this interview. Like, I can't even imagine what that must have felt like. And
so,
yeah.
So look, is there a way to talk about her figure that's relevant to a conversation? I think the answer is yes. Should you be careful? Yeah, you should be careful how you do it. But in the context that he did it, there was like, it was not just missing the mark. It seemed to be purposely sexist because he said, does it detract from being a serious actress? No, but then you're saying, hey, okay, you're hot. Acknowledging that is one thing. Mm-hmm. But because you're hot, we can't take you seriously. Now, but that's kind of the definition of sexism. To say to someone, I'm not taking you seriously for what your real job is, because I'm too obsessed staring at your body. And I'll do it in the middle of this interview, I'll stare at your body, right?
Yeah, and it's also, you know, pretty much attacking her for something she can't control. So the size of her breasts, it's not like that's something that she did anything about, like that's just her natural size of her breasts, right? And to use that against her is ridiculous. And by the way, she had commented on that interview back in 2011, and I love what she had to say about it even then. She says, outrageous, that's the first talk show I'd ever done, I was terrified. I watched it and actually thought, bloody hell, I did really well. I was so young and inexperienced, and he was such an fucking sexist old fart. He denies it to this day that it was sexist, but of course he was. Yeah, that, I mean, that's, I feel like that's honestly an example of sexual harassment as well. Like when someone just blatantly stares at your breasts and tries to make you feel uncomfortable about it.
So look, I'll divide this into two different categories. The people, like let's say you're interviewing a stripper. Is it okay to talk about her breasts? I think that answer is obviously yes. So, because that her job is
it's part of her job.
Is part of her job, yeah. Right? That's right. And then, can you talk about people's appearances in jobs that are somewhat about their appearance? For example, us. Yeah, I think you can talk about that, but be a little careful because if that's all you're obsessed about and all you care about, well, then you're misdirected, right? Mm-hmm. And then the last part of it is, if you conflate the two things, okay, so. And you talk about a woman's appearance or a man's, it's theoretically possible, doesn't happen as often, right? And say that's the only reason they got the job. That's the only reason this, that, or otherwise. Like, so, like, for example, I don't even want to give examples, but there's been people in incredibly important positions of power in politics here in this country, in other countries, and if you're sitting there talking about their ass or their bosom or whatever it is, it's not just disrespectful, it's stupid, And yes, that's sexist, because what you're saying is, no matter what you are, even if you're the prime minister, you're the head of our foreign policy, I don't care. I'm only going to judge you based on your physical appearance. And if you don't understand that that's the definition of sexism, then you just don't get it.
Yeah, or you just don't want to get it. And of course, there are plenty of people out there who don't want to get it. But the one thing that I will point to is this story, even though it made me cringe watching that interview, also made me feel a little good about where we are now. Because if that interview took place today, I mean, the backlash that that host would face would be pretty significant. And mm-hmm. So we have made a lot of progress, and that's something to celebrate. And so for people out there, especially women who have like this negative knee-jerk reaction to the word feminist or feminism, understand that this is the kind of stuff that feminism fought back against, right? Don't let right-wingers, steal the narrative or change the narrative of what feminists try to do or want to do, okay? They're not out there to take the rights away from men. Unless you consider, being creepy during an interview a right that men should have.
But to be fair to that guy and Anna, all people cared about was Helen Mirren's looks. And so, I mean, did she ever wind up becoming a serious actress?
I don't know. Maybe not. It's just so stupid. By the way, like, can we have a discussion about how that guy looks? Really? anyway.
I mean, if you're going to throw stones, you might want to look out for the glass house.
Are you a serious talk show host?
Well, it appears he wasn't, though, to be fair.
All right, moving on. A photo of an elderly couple crying as they separate is going viral on the internet, especially because of the backstory involved. Now, the photo is of Wolf and Anita Gottschalk. I don't know if that's how you say their name.
But that's all right. God bless.
All right. So there's Wolf and Anita, and they're crying because they are about to separate from one another. They're actually living in separate nursing homes, and apparently there's some sort of issue with one of the nursing homes taking too long to accept one of them as a patient. Okay. So Wolf, who's 83, was placed in a nursing home in January of this year after suffering from congestive heart failure. His wife, Anita, currently lives in a different nursing home 30 minutes away. According to their granddaughter, the family has been pleading with the healthcare officials to get the couple reunited so they can live together in the same nursing home, but to no avail. Their granddaughter blames the issue on backlogs and delays by our healthcare system. Now, one of the nursing homes said, look, we're sorry that this is happening, and we're working on it, and we're trying to make sure that we can, admit, the other person into our system. But apparently it's taking too long. So their granddaughter decided to put this photo up online so it would go viral and get the attention it needs. The reason why they're crying is because they've been together for 62 years. They're inseparable, and now all of a sudden they literally have to leave one another and go live in separate nursing homes.
She was hoping that it'd get a little bit of attention and get shared in her local community. Instead, it's been shared all across the world.
Yeah.
So I think that there's no bad intent here by anybody. Maybe I'm being too fair, but hear me out on this. My guess is yes, there are bureaucracies, and in Canada in this situation, and it might have been that they got put into different nursing homes, from what I understand from the story, based on something logical, like he had a heart condition and had to be taken care of in a certain place, and she had a different situation and had to be taken care of in a different place.
Yeah.
So now, once you find out, well, they're married, and it'd be ideal to have them in the same place, you would hope that bureaucracy works quicker. Mm-hmm. And now it turns out he's got
dementia.
And so we all want to expedite this as quickly as possible. And it's heartbreaking to see that picture. But so I just want people to get a sense that it's not like somebody's like, let's keep them apart. Ah, we will, get these grand people. Okay. And bureaucracy does happen. But it's not like because somebody wants to create a bureaucracy, there's certain things that have to be, processes that you got to go through, and it's oftentimes super frustrating. It's in there for a reason in the first place, but sometimes it gets bogged down. Now, I love what the granddaughter's doing too, because mm-hmm. she's saying, okay, look, I got to fix this one way or another, so this is my form of protest.
Right.
And guess what? Now it looks like it's going to get cleared up in a couple of weeks. So sometimes if you push the right buttons, All of a sudden, they can clear up that bureaucracy a little bit quicker than they initially claimed.
That's what I look. There are upsides and downsides to the internet, clearly, but I love that it does empower people to, you know, take action to get the action that they need, right? And that's what's happening with this story. But aside from the healthcare component to it, I just want to talk about how freaking scary it is to get old, right? No, because the scariest part about growing old is there's a huge chance that you're going to end up alone, right? Because everyone around you is dying. And if you're lucky, you'll have your partner left. And you see this, and they love each other, and they're inseparable, and then you have, you know, this system that unfortunately is separating them for some period of time. And it just breaks my heart. Like, I see that picture, and first of all, the love they have for one another inspires me. And it makes me feel good to know that there are still people that can be married that long and they still love each other that much. But then the fact that they feel so helpless, like, just breaks my heart.
No, I know. And I'll tell you, guys, 85 is a reasonable limit. Here's what I mean by that. This is super rough, but by the age of 85, about 50% of people start to have some issues with their mental faculties, dementia, Alzheimer's, memory loss, etc. So 50% is a very high number. So I've always thought, I got to 85, that I mean, it's I mean, then you're super lucky if you get past that and are still have your mental faculties with you, etc. And you might, and it might be wonderful, and I know plenty of people who have, right? I know 90-year-olds who are in great, great shape and could out-debate me anytime, okay? Which maybe is a low bar, but still. Okay, so that means, for example, I'm 46. I only have 39 years left. I've lived 46 years. I've got 39 left where hopefully I'm not going to have memory loss, etc. So I tell you all this not to depress you, but to say, up and at 'em, go live life. And it doesn't mean you should go crazy today and go take fentanyl, okay? It means know that every day is precious and try to get the most out of it as you plan towards the future. Try to find a good balance. Don't worry just about working hard in the future and all this stuff and forget about today. Don't do the reverse either. Mm-hmm. Be reasonable, but make sure no matter what you do that, you know, you get the most you can out of life. It's all we got.
Yeah.
Okay? That inspiration, kind of somewhat inspirational message brought to you by the Young Turks. Okay, move forward.
Melanie Jones was bleeding when she realized that she was probably having complications with her IUD. Now, that is an intrauterine device that prevents you from getting pregnant. And she was concerned that it was possibly dislodged after she had a very bad fall. So she goes to the hospital, and she's expecting to get help because she's literally bleeding and in pain, but she was told that they couldn't help her. Due to Catholic restrictions put in place by Chicago's Mercy Hospital Health System, she'd be unable to remove the IUD, she meaning the doctor. In addition, no one in Jones's insurance network could remove the IUD because they followed similar restrictions. Mercy, like many Catholic medical providers, follow directives issued by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops that restrict access to an array of services, including abortion care, tubal ligations, and contraception. So right now, the hospital is basically releasing a statement saying, no, there was some sort of miscommunication. Of course, we would help someone who's having issues with their IUD. But Jones is alleging that, no, they turned her away and said, your health insurance company, which is Blue Shield, only allows you to go to these doctors at these hospitals, and they're all part of this weird Catholic network that's obviously very much against reproductive rights, and so you can go screw yourself now.
The name of the hospital is Mercy.
I know, it's crazy.
But they had no mercy for her. And it gets into weird distinctions like a copper IUD versus other types of IUDs, because the other IUDs could be prescribed at the hospital or dealt with because they could have other reasons for being on in instead of contraception,
so
for like acne or heavy periods. But a copper IUD
is specifically used for contraceptive purposes.
Because it contains no hormones. And since it's for that purpose, they go, nope, sorry, copper IUD. And the sky god told us that we are not to treat women who are bleeding out if they have this kind of contraception, because the Sky Guard is so merciful. He named this hospital Mercy, and he's so pro-life that we're not even going to treat you when you're bleeding and in tremendous pain.
Can we finally just accept the fact that the vast majority of pro-lifers, not all, but the majority, are not really pro-life? Okay, can we just accept that? Can we accept that it's more about punishing women who are sexually active than anything else? Because I'm tired of it. I'm tired of their self-righteous BS about how they think it's life at the moment of conception, yet they say nothing when guys are whacking off in the corner, you know, spilling their seed all over the place. Like, that's okay. Okay, but if a woman uses contraceptives in order to prevent getting pregnant, well, she's a demon, and we should all judge her. And if she's bleeding because of her IUD, well, then we can't help her because we want to sit here and judge her and punish her instead. It's not about pro-life. If you're actually pro-life, you'd want to help her to ensure she doesn't die from her IUD, you know, being dislodged or whatever happened to it.
Yeah, like there's all these different layers to it. In the Bible, it's also wrong to spill your seed. It's onanism. But nobody ever emphasizes that anymore because it's uncomfortable to guys because they spill their seed all over the place and so they don't want to talk about it. So
all they speed they'll spill their seed while they're sleeping, right?
Yeah. Nope. Sorry, but we don't talk about that anymore.
Yeah.
Then like that's supposed to be for getting women pregnant and every sperm is sacred, and so but when it comes to guys, no, we don't do anything about that. Now condoms, yes. Theoretically wrong according to the bishops. Mm-hmm. Does anybody ever do anything about it? Nope, because that's the guy who doesn't want to get her pregnant. So that's fine. Come on, you don't. Then she's going to hound you for payments and stuff like that. Oh, she's using contraception. Who the hell gave you the right to make decisions? No, guys make decisions, not you. You see how pro-life I am? No, it doesn't have anything. Okay, well then, it's a life form. Okay, fine, you prevented the abortion, it's born. Now, can we get her daycare so that she can go to work and provide? No! Bootstraps, life. I don't care about the baby's life. I don't care at all. No, you get stayed anchored to that baby and do as you're told. That's what this is about.
Yep.
So now here's a person who's bleeding. And what does she bleed for, weeks?
Yeah, so let me give you the details on what happened next. Thankfully, the ACLU got involved. She tried to see whether her healthcare provider could at least refer her somewhere else. She realized that she had two options. One option was to go to an emergency room, and then she'd have to pay $1,000 out of pocket to get the help she needed. That wasn't an option for her because she couldn't afford it. The other option was to literally wait weeks in order to get transferred to a different healthcare plan. And then when she got the ACLU involved, what the ACLU did is they kind of pressured her healthcare company to expedite the process. So she had to wait 5 days, but they later removed the IUD and now she's fine. But the fact that she had to go through all of that in a country called America is crazy. Like, I feel like regardless of what your political or religious beliefs are, if you are a doctor, if you're a healthcare provider, it is your ethical obligation to save the life of anyone who comes in needing help. But that's not what they did here.
Look, are you guys doctors or are you not doctors?
Yeah.
Are you in the healthcare? Look, I appreciate that these Catholic charities started the hospitals. There's Jewish charities that started hospitals. These are all wonderful things, okay? Now, at the same time, are you in the doctoring business or are you not? Do you believe in the oath that you took or don't you? And so don't come here and tell us, no, I'm going to help everybody unless, you know, it violates something that some bishop in a really funny outfit decided that some other dude 2,000 years ago said or talked to the sky god about, and because of that and my interpretation of it, I'm not going to do my job. I'm not going to do it. So do your damn job. If you're a clerk somewhere in Kentucky and the law is that you give licenses to everyone, gay or straight, do your job or get the hell out of that job and go get something else. If you're a Muslim clerk at a convenience store and you won't check out ham or bacon, well, go get another job. Do your job or leave, okay? And if you're a doctor and a woman comes to you and she's bleeding, don't pretend you're pro-life when you don't help her. Either be a doctor or don't be a doctor. Do your job or leave.
I agree with that 100%.
Okay, all right, we're out of time. Okay. I guess we'll lighten it up in the post game.
Yeah.
It was a heavy ending.
Mm-hmm.
To an otherwise light show. My first hour was super light. It was light as a cloud. Okay, all you members, you know how fun the post game is. We'll see you over there. And if you're not a member, that's all right. We still love you, but tytnetwork.com/join. Can I see 24,000? Can I see 24,000?
Come on, man.
We'll start another show. You think we won't start another show? Now, a lot of you watched Aggressive Progressive. Yeah. You loved it.
Yeah.
We'll start another show. Can I see 24,000?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.